Hey everyone, before we get into this episode, just two quick things. First off, now you can go to patreon.com/thefitcast to support the show. There you can really contribute a dollar amount per episode that is released. So you only contribute if a new episode comes out. And that way, you know, you don't have to do a set donation, but you can just say, hey, you know, I'm going to give $2. I'm going to give $1 per episode that comes out of the Fitcast and help keep it going. Right now, after about 72 hours of its launch, we have about 25 contributors. So I'm hoping more people jump on there and, you know, more people think that this is a valuable resource that's worth keeping around. You know the body of work. There's about 300 plus episodes that have been produced. And my goal is to make sure that this show stays completely advertising free because I don't want to keep chasing down advertising. And I think for people out there, like, that gets annoying. I don't want to put commercials in the episode. Like, even this, I think, is a lot. So that's one thing. And then also, I want to cease complete usage of affiliate linkage and stuff like that, because I think that is a weirder side of the industry. And I think that makes it a little bit harder to, you know, get people on the show. And I still want to get people on if they got new stuff coming out that I think is worth checking out. But it's really hard to depend on that affiliate sale commission to make sure that I can keep the show supported to keep it going. So that's what I'm really asking. Go to patreon.com/thefitcast, and I'll have links for it in the show notes and on the website to help you contribute to the show. And please, if you're one of those out there, like, I'm looking at you, I'm in your ears, please take the time and go to that website and check it out. Like, I'm really only asking for a dollar per episode. And really, that would be huge if we can get a good size of the audience to do something like that. Also, if that is not an option for you, you can still go to thefitcast.com and click on that PayPal donation tab on the left-hand side. And any amount would be great to help keep the show going. I want to do some really cool stuff for the show going forward. There's more on the patreon.com website. And like I said, you're going to get the Fitcast Insider for completely free. That's like 20 episodes that I did, over 10 hours of audio from people out there. Actually, it's probably closer to 20 hours of audio that I've done in the past with people. That's like in a seminar format. And I'm just going to put all that online for free if we can hit that goal of $500 per episode. So again, please check it out, patreon.com/thefitcast, or go to thefitcast.com, click on that donation tab on the left-hand side. There's going to be the last that you hear me talk about this, except for like a five-second thing at the beginning of the shows going forward. So thank you for listening. And if you're one of those people that are helping support the show, you mean so much. Like, you are helping keeping the show going. So thank you so much for keeping the show free, advertising free, and affiliate free. Thank you. Well, welcome back to the Fitcast. This is episode number 304. I am Kevin Larrabee, and I'm very happy to have on the show, finally. Like, I feel like we've been trying to connect on this for years now. I have the one and only Roger Lawson, Raj Law. What's up, Roger?
What's up, man? I like the intro because it makes me seem like I'm way more important than I am. Like, I've been trying to get him on for years, man. He's just hard to pin down. He's in the streets.
You are hard to pin down. You're all over the place. You're traveling the planet, and you're living in remote locations.
Yeah.
And it's time zones and things like that, but you're in the United States of America right now.
America, right.
And I was able to pin you down. We were finally able to, like, line up our schedules and stuff like that. And, like, it's weird to finally get you on because we've been friends since, like, you know, we both interned at Cressy's back in, like, I was in 08, and I think you were later in 08.
Yeah, 09, like, right, yeah, summer 09.
Yeah, and it was just that situation where, you know, I was still lifting there because I was working at a commercial gym. Like, I don't want to, you know, work out there. So
yeah,
still training at Cressy's. We got to know each other and things like that. And we had ended up having tons of stuff in common, of course, with, you know, our love for video games and for, you know, all things kind of, you know, if you want to call it like nerd stuff or whatever.
Yeah.
I guess that's not necessarily a negative.
Not at all. I'm glad, man, I'm glad it's not anymore, because that was lame back in the day. You were a nerd, and then that was it. You were just like, you were stuck in your corner of the world. But now, see, here's the thing. Now it's cool to be a nerd. So now the real nerds are starting to get jealous. They're like, man, what's going on? It's like, because it's poser nerds. They're just hopping on because it's cool. But once it becomes uncool again at some point, they'll fall off. They'll die off. And then the real ones will come back out. But, like, see, we're still here.
Yeah, we'll see. It's a situation where A lot of people out there kind of were the nerds in school, and then they tend to get out of that and away from high school. Like I always talk, like you can always, like I work with mostly middle school kids, and we'll sometimes, you know, have those kids that are really quiet when they come in, and you can really tell, like, you know, they're not the, you know, part of like the cliques or whatever you want to call it of the school. And it's like always fun to, for me to spend more time, I always spend more time with those kids in my group just because I'm like, so dude, what are you playing on Xbox right now? What are you? Right. It's like, those are the kids that I can almost relate to more than anyone. And it's always great to see, like, being able to get those guys to open up, you know, boys and girls, to get them to, yeah, to open up about what they, you know, like reading or are watching and listening to music and stuff like that. So that's just a message for people out there that, you know, we were the nerds growing up, and, you know,
look at us now.
Yeah, right. we're doing podcasts and training people and changing the world. So
started from the bottom, now we're here. That's right.
So what I wanted to start off with is really talking to you that, you know, with this series that I'm doing, or this set of episodes, is really start to, you know, introduce the audience to other people, some fresh voices out there. But you really have been doing a lot. I mean, you've been writing, you've been doing podcasts and things like that. But for people out there that don't know you, the thing that I wanted to start off with is just like, how did you, you know, get into fitness? How did you know that this is going to be the thing that you wanted to devote your career to and make a living off of?
Man, so it's a really funny story. So it really does go back to the beginning when just growing up, like I had no inclinations towards sports whatsoever. Like from an early age, I was in like the Boy Scouts, and they had some base, like T-ball team. And like, that's not really a sport. The ball is on a stick. And even then I barely hit it. I just like swing and hit the stick and the ball would fall. And I'm like, I did something. I'm good. And I just run, and I run slow and awkward, and I get out. But I just didn't, like, back then, like, it was all about video games back then for me. Like, the Nintendo had just came out, and I'm like, why am I out here running when I could be playing Mario on
nice
the couch?
It's dark inside. Exactly. There's, I'm like, not sweating. Cold drinks.
Yeah, I'm like, there's no physical exertion. I'm not sweating, blah, blah, blah. So I really never had much of, like, an inclination towards sports at all. So growing up, I'd say I played a couple sports. So baseball until I was 12. Mm-hmm. Most of the time I was in the outfield, just standing there, like kicking. What is it? The dandelions? They just float off. And
yeah, I was there with you, man.
I was that guy. I'm like, yeah. And then the ball does come out there. I'm like, oh, I should have been ready, but I was not. And then like once that was up, I did track and field. And that was in high school, so it was a big gap between baseball and then track and field. And then I did – that was pretty much shot put, because I was like, all right, this is the least amount of effort. I get to throw something.
Don't tell Dan John that.
Oh, he's going to – this is the last episode where people will hear about me, because Dan John will kill me.
Yeah.
He will gobble squat me to death.
he's doing discus, but, I mean, shot put is going to be right up there in terms of the same family of events.
I mean, not to knock on Dan John, but I did both, and I was pretty horrible at him. So
you got to go to his discus camp, man.
I was so garbage. I was like, this is like Frisbee. No, not at all. Not at all. But really, so, like, up until – I'd say college, I really had no experience with lifting of any kind, like other than a couple days in a row. Mm-hmm. And I first got started in middle school, and it was like I bought 10-pound weights from like Kmart or something, because there's this girl I wanted to impress. So I was, you know, if I'm setting the scene, I'm in my basement, I got these 10-pound dumbbells, and I'm just curling because that's the only exercise I know in middle school. I'm like, biceps curl, whatever, and I'm just doing like 50 reps, 100 reps. I feel like the weight's so heavy, but if I think about it now, I'm like, wow, what was I doing? But man, I got like a pump going on with that. 100 reps of anything, even a soup can, would mm-hmm. get you a brief pump. So really, like, that's where we got started. But I had no kind of consistency until I'd say about 2009. And what happened then was Precision Nutrition. It's, you know, the nutrition company with John Berardi and like Nate Green, all those guys. So they had this lean eating challenge. And the reason I found that is because, you know, I went to the doctor and I got like a physical, and they did blood work and everything. And they found that my cholesterol was like super high. It was like 350 or 400 or something. I'm like,
wow.
I'm like, I don't know what that means, but I'm
was
sure
it's not.
Was your
diet bad,
good.
Or was like, were you just kind of like eating regular, or I mean, because I know when I met you, like you still weren't necessarily out of shape, and I remember seeing the before pictures for the PN stuff, and you weren't like, I wouldn't call you obese.
No, I was not obese, but my diet was atrocious. It was like, and we can get into the we can get into that as we go on, but it was, let's just say it was super bad, like almost as bad. Like if I had a reality show where they just followed me around and ate, I don't think I'd have any friends. At this point, they'd be like, "Oh God."
Back then, back then, were you on the you know, the Cinnabon bandwagon? Was this part of your you know, trip to high cholesterol?
And- yeah, pretty much. Like, but here's the thing: like, there was an evolution to the Cinnabon, because before Cinnabon, there was Hostess Honey Buns, and that started in Christmas of 1991. I only know that because I have the video. My mom did like home videos, and it's so embarrassing watching these. And she like came out, and it was like this grainy, like found footage type film, and I'm just like Santa Claus left the honey bun on the table, and I'm like stumbling out of my room in my Ninja Turtle PJs. I'm like, oh, what's this? And I start eating it, and then I'm just like crushing it, and there's like frosting all over my mouth, and my mom is cracking up.
Dude, those are great. Those are two for a buck, right?
Yeah. The Hostesses are like, well, actually, maybe back then, pre-inflation, yeah, that was like two for a buck. But then they bumped up to 79 and 99, then Hostess collapsed, and then they changed the recipe, and I was like, I need something else. And then that's when the Cinnabon came in.
I remember that. I was totally the same way. Like, the cinnamon buns were one of my favorite things growing up, but I remember the honey buns as well. And that, like, sometimes you couldn't really find a good cinnamon bun at a grocery store.
Yeah, it's hit and miss.
It's totally hit and miss, but those things, like, they were always relatively soft, and that, I remember they had instructions on the bag to, like, microwave.
To warm it up. Yeah. It was like, I was like, yes, thank you. How I was, I love America. This is, you can get like 800 calories for 50 cents.
Yeah.
But yeah, like pretty much back then it was very much like that. It was just eating whatever I wanted, not really thinking about any kind of long-term or health. I'm like, oh, because back then I associated just being lean-ish or lean, like not overweight with being healthy, not really thinking that you could be lean and still be pretty unhealthy. So once I got those results from my doctor, and my mom was super worried, she was like crying, and she was like, you're gonna have a heart attack. And like you know, I love my mom, so I'm like, man, all right, she's crying, she's worried, I don't want to make her stressed out. So I'm like, all right, what can I do? Because they were talking about, like, the first meeting I had with the doctor, they're like, well, we're gonna put you on statins. And I'm like, oh, let's not do that. I don't know much. I only know video games.
And how old were you at the time? You were 20?
So 2008, so 22.
22, okay.
Yep, so I'm like, let's not go that route. That seems, because then I started Googling statins, and I'm like printing out stuff. I'm like, oh, this.
Like side effects and stuff like that.
Yeah, I'm like, this could kill my boner. This could just do all sorts of bad things I don't want. I'm like, let's try getting my diet together first. So, and it, like, as luck had it, I don't know how I found out about Precision Nutrition, but somehow, I think it was on some kind of forum. I was deep into the, just all kinds of forums.
Like bodybuilding.com, or was it even like, it was like totally a different genre, a different topic?
Dude, I think it was SRK forums, like Street Fighter forums.
No way.
SureYouCan.com. Yeah, somehow, I think somebody mentioned something, because they had like a general discussion thread, and I was in there, and I think that's how I found out. I could be wrong, but that's where I was hanging out most of the time, and I'm like,
So you totally lucked out. Like, you basically went to, I mean, at that time and still today, like, one of the best resources out there for nutrition information, like research-based, like, and all that stuff.
Right. So, like, I consider myself very lucky from the start, because I could have went to some, like, getripfast.org.net.something and been filled with so much crap. But instead, I got pushed towards that resource. And I was like, oh, this is dope. So I got the PN binder. And I had like the big packets and everything. I was reading through everything, and I saw that they had this coaching program where it was 6 months, and it was like transformation. And the thing that like got me at that point, because I was thinking, I was like, all right, I need to do something about my health. But I know myself, I'm more externally motivated than internally a lot of the time, at least for like physique and things like that. So I was like, all right, what can I do? What's something that would motivate me to kind of give it my all? And they were like, the winner gets $10,000. And I was like, whoa, I've never had that much money in my life. So, and I was thinking like I could pay off my student loans and this and that with that kind of money. So I was like, all right, even if I lose, I win because I'm going to be healthier. I'm going to hopefully not die prematurely. And, you know, that's the worst that can happen. The best that can happen is all that. And I have a lot of money to pay off my loans. So I signed up for that, and it was really like – it was essentially life-changing because I went from not knowing anything really to like just being immersed in fitness. So I went from 0 to 60 so fast. Like I was – like back then, you know, and their philosophy has changed a lot. But, you know, back then it was like 6 meals a day, blah, blah, blah. But whatever they said, I bought in because I was like, this – what they sound like they know what they're talking about. I am ready.
Well, that's so like what it is with any program, like whether it be fitness or nutrition today, it's like finding the program that you're going to buy into and say, this is like, I was talking with Molly Galbraith about this a couple episodes back and just how, you know, that's all, you know, you need is to find a program that you're going to buy into and you're going to be convinced that it's going to work if you just follow it.
Yep. And that's the thing is you have to, and I think that's honestly what did it for me because like, it seemed like I was like, oh, 5 to 6 meals a day, eat every 2 to 3 hours. I've never done anything like this, but I'm like, whatever, I'm in. And as soon as you say you're in, as soon as you commit to it, I found that I just found a way to make it happen because I was obnoxious back then. Like I worked in a library and on campus, and I brought like this army duffel bag, and I had, oh, it was bad. So I had an actual blender. Like not like a magic bullet. It's like the huge base, and I had the big glass container in there, and I had
like your Sunbeam, like yeah, you know, cheap, you know what you can like the lowest one. I had the same one in college. Like I went into Walmart, found the cheapest blender I could get for 20 bucks or whatever.
Yep, and it had that big glass container. I'm like, what? I'm walking around, so I had that in my bag. Then I had my prepped meals. Then I had like 2 pounds of what T-Nation protein because I was like, all right, whatever, this is good. So I'd have all my meals and that and that, and I just walk around camp. I was that dude, and I wasn't even jacked or anything. I was just like, I'm committed. I'm not just effing this up at all. So I'd be in the library, and like my watch would go off, and I'm like, it's time to eat. So I'd go like ask my boss, I'm like, can I get a little break, like a little 10-minute break? And then I just make my shake in the back. And that thing is so loud, it sounds like a chainsaw. And the library is so quiet, and people are like, what? So quick, like eventually I started smuggling into the basement and going to the staff area in the corner where it was like I was trying to insulate a bomb from going off and doing as much damage. I'm like, all right, I'm in the corner. Hopefully no one can hear it. I'll blend it for like 10 seconds, and if there's clumps, I'll deal with it. But it was like that commitment, and then I just started building on that, even though it was difficult. And in the end, I ended up losing, like in 6 months, I lost, 20 pounds? So I went from like 210 with like little man boobs to 190 to like, I was pretty lean. Like, and I did photos, and those photos are hilarious. Like, the think about, I haven't looked at them in a while. They used to be on my site, but one of the parts of the program was they wanted us to do a photo shoot to like celebrate our successes and what we've done so far. So, man, I shaved my chest. I shaved my, I was like, what? And then I got the picture. I was like, I look good. But I'm looking back, I'm like, I look like a little boy. What's going on? But it's like a time capsule moment. So from there on, like once I had that success for me, I realized, I was like, this is a great feeling. I want to help other people feel this way. And like, honestly, from that point, so that wrapped up in 2009. So it started in 2008, 6 months, ended in 2009. But between then, I was absorbing everything about fitness, and I was on T-Nation, and somehow I came across the FitCast because I was so into it. Like, dude, you don't know it, but I was like your biggest fan back in the day. I was downloading every episode. It was like I had the ones with like Cassandra Forsyth and John Berardi. I had the ones with Scott Abel. I was walking around with my like
SanDisk. I gotta get Scott Abel back on. I haven't even thought about having him back on in years, but he's great.
Yeah, man. I was taking notes. It's like I remember one thing he said out of all the interviews. It's I think he said when you change the way you're looking at things, the things you look at change. I was like, holy shit, that's the most mind-blowing thing I've ever heard. And I was taking notes and everything. So, and then I remember on one episode you were talking about how you interned at Cressy Performance, And I was like, huh, that seems like a place that I could learn a lot at. He seemed like he had fun. And at this point, I was still in college. I had no exercise science background because I was an English lit major. So I attribute this to me being young and not really knowing what letting myself get in my own way. I was like, well, I'll apply because why not? Because that seems like what you do. When you want something, you apply and you hear back, not realizing like how great an opportunity that was and how competitive it was. So I just applied, and I ended up, because I lived in Michigan at the time, I ended up coming out to Massachusetts after applying and meeting up with Eric and Tony and Pete at one of Mike Boyle's seminars that winter of 09. So I drove like 8 hours in the snow, wearing these like tight khakis. When I showed up, I looked like a complete noob. I'm like, all right, I got these khakis, I got this ill-fitting shirt. I was looking around the seminar. I'm like, oh man, all these people I read about, they're here. And funny story, when I met Tony, because we had been emailing back and forth, and I was reading his blog, I gave him like this DVD, this like Kung Fu DVD. I was like, oh, I want you to have this. I think you would like it. And he was like, oh, thanks. And then years later, I was talking to him. I was like, did you ever watch that DVD? He's like, no. As soon as you turned the corner, I threw it away. I was like, but it was like, really, that's how I got started, just one step after another, and each step, new opportunities opened up for me. And long story short, I think they saw my commitment, even though I didn't have the, technical knowledge. I was passionate and committed to learning what I needed to know. Mm-hmm. And to them, that was most important. So they brought me on, and I was in summer of 09, and that's like, that got my start. So I had a very untraditional path. I went from school to one of the best gyms in the world. And that's where I like got my feet wet. I didn't have any bad habits to unlearn. And then from there, it's just been like a crazy, crazy roller coaster ride.
Wow. That's
boom.
That's pretty crazy, because we really haven't even talked about any of this stuff before. I mean, we've hung out, but never been like, dude, so how'd you get your start? You know, in the yeah. industry. So this is super fascinating to hear about. All right, so you start at Cressy's, and by the way, Tony is a movie snob, so that doesn't surprise me that he would throw that out. He only watches movies that are at independent
Sundance.
Yeah, they're like independent, movie theaters that only hold 100 people and all that crap.
Yep.
But all right, so you go to Cressy's, and you wrap things up, and that was the one thing when I met you, is just like seeing that you're soaking everything up, and above all else, like, this is something that you need to be in this industry, is that you were incredibly nice, and you just worked so well with people. Like, everyone that you met pretty much immediately falls in love with you. And I just remember whether it was like the Thanksgiving day lift at Cressy's, and like, I still like, see photos of that on Facebook. Like, we have photos of that has popped up.
So swole. Remember the bicep circuit?
Of course. Yeah, we had banners that said it was specifically like who wrote that thing? It might have been, it was just like the best bicep exercises ever on T Nation. It was some article that had some crazy exercises in it, like banners just did drop sets for easy bar curls and things like that. But it's just really funny hearing all that stuff, and just to remember some of that. Dude, we're getting old, man.
I feel like, and people that listen, they're like, what, you guys aren't even in your 30s? Chill out. But like, really, I think back, I'm like, holy shit, this was like 2009.
Yeah.
And it goes by so fast. And I haven't really sat down to think about it, but it's like all these memories, all these friends, and it's just really humbling, and it's awesome to realize, I have all that in my life and the people I'm meeting, and it feels good, man.
Well, another thing I wanted to just say again, you mentioned it, but all you did was send an email. Like, you took that first step to email someone and make that first contact, just not worrying like, I'm going to get shut down, I'm going to get rejected or anything like that. And that is one of the best things above the world today, is that everyone has, if they don't have an email online, they have a Twitter account, or they have a Facebook account, they have a website, they have some way to get in contact with them. So if you want to, Like, that's how I did it with a Fitcast. It was just emailing people, like emailing Craig Ballantyne, emailing John Berardi, and saying, hey, can I talk to you for an hour and a half? And if you want to talk to these people, I don't care who they are. Like, no one in this industry is so busy where they aren't going to pay it back. If they're not going to pay it back because they once sent out an email or they made a phone call beforehand and asked for advice or asked for help, they're just a-holes. And you'll want to be associated with them anyways.
And that's the great thing I love about the industry, because there, you know, nowadays there seems to be a lot of, you know, back and forth in terms of like arguments and this philosophy and that philosophy. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, the people are still people and we're all in this together. So I wouldn't be anywhere near where I am if it weren't for the kindness of, you know, people just with their time and their knowledge and just everything. Like, I would be, I can't even say that word. How do you feel about that? I would be slow, very slow in terms of like my development if it weren't for all that help. Because if just asking people, it seems like a lot when you're just starting out. You're like, oh, this, you start to, at least I know I did, you start to put limitations on yourself. You're like, oh, this person's busy. Mm-hmm. They won't respond. You start to talk yourself out of things before you even start. And I think back then I had a lot less of those inhibitions. I'm like, oh, it's just an email. I'll send it out. Mm-hmm. It was just normal. Versus like now, it's funny. I've gone backwards at times. It's like, oh, I won't send this person this. They're busy, blah, blah, blah. But back then I was just like, all right, I won't talk myself out of it. I'll just do it and see what happens. And that, I think that's really a really good approach to have in general, like when you're pursuing something, even in fitness, even in terms of your goals, is just to see what happens. Just try it initially and go from there. Don't talk yourself out of something before you have any experience of it with yourself. And it's been amazing.
Well, you eventually left Cressy's and you got a job. I think it was in Shrewsbury, Mass.
Yeah, man, nobody knows where Shrewsbury is. It's I didn't either. But it's it's a little small town.
I live in Massachusetts. I have no idea where it is,
dude. You've never been out here. There's nothing here. There's nothing here but the gym, and we have a Walmart, and they have competitive prices. But yeah, Shrewsbury, Mass. I was at this gym called All Access Fitness Academy. It's smaller, like it's not a chain, so it's the only gym of its kind. But it has the same feeling as Cressy does. It's the same, like the same kind of equipment, that same mentality. We like working with athletes, but we also cater to, you know, everyday people more so than athletes. And it's also attached to a physical therapy branch. So you have the synergy of both of those working together. And I really, like, that was the best working experience I could have had post Cressy, because I knew, since I wasn't, like, I love working at Cressy, but I knew I didn't want to work with athletes exclusively. Because sometimes I'd be working with the athletes there and I'm like, oh, I don't know what to talk to you about, because you're saying sports terms and I don't know what that means. Like, I remember at one point Kevin Youkilis was training at Cressy's and I had no idea who he was. And I was like, people were like losing their shit. And I'm like, I don't know what's going on. I was just completely oblivious. But, when I started at All Access, they were just opening up when I started. So I got to grow with the business and get my feet wet and try to apply everything that I learned at Cressy's in a different environment. And what I realized is that, you know, you don't have to take everything as is. You can kind of remix it and play around with the different variables. So I got to kind of develop my own way of doing things with the information that I learned there, but applying it to this different population. And really, it's like like you were saying earlier, and you and Molly talked about, it's by getting people to buy in to whatever they're doing. So it's about making people feel comfortable and capable and empowering them. It's not really trying to drop all sorts of knowledge, because that's one thing I had to learn. Like, I was like, man, I know all this stuff. Let me drop some science on you. And I didn't know shit. So now it's like you have to connect first on that mental or emotional level first, and then the people tend to open up and or just more comfortable with what you have to say, versus if you're trying to drop all sorts of complicated terms just to feel like you know, or you're trying to prove your worth, like you know all these things to them, when they really don't care. They just want to look a certain way or feel a certain way or something. And if you can help them get there, they don't care if you have a cert, they don't care if you know what this muscle is or that muscle is. They just trust you. And that's really something that I think I've learned to be better at, and it's something I still want to improve on. But that was definitely a key to my success in person and, you know, online, just building relationships and helping people feel comfortable and kind of giving them something to, like, showing them a version of themselves that they can aspire to, that they want to aspire to, and then helping them get there.
That's super cool stuff. All right. I hope people are listening, because especially if you're coming up in the industry or you're starting to, you know, get your foot in the door, this is some stuff you should really be taking notes on and thinking about. I've been listening to the Stone Cold Steve Austin podcast quite a
what?
Bit.
What? There's a podcast?
He is a fantastic podcast.
Yeah.
So, totally. So this is going to be my tribute to him. I'm going to open a can
of whoop-ass.
Of green tea whoop-ass for the working man and woman out there, because that's his thing. He's like, you know, sip a beer for the working man and the working woman out there. I do the podcast for the working person or whatever. So that was just, I don't know, that was funny. I was listening to it while I was walking my dog before doing this, and I have a can of green tea right here. I got to open it up and pop it open. So, okay, so I'm going to jump around a little bit and talk to you about some of the other stuff that you've done, just because it was a couple months. I mean, it was maybe almost a year ago now. You initially went to Thailand.
Yep.
And for me, I'm very much a play it safe person. I don't really take a lot of risks. And I think the biggest risk I ever took in my life was going out to Japan that first time and not knowing anything, not knowing anyone, and just going out by myself and just thinking, like, I need to do this. Like, it was one of those things I had to kick myself in the ass to do. But yep. You went out to Thailand initially, and then you came back, but then you moved out there for a while. So I just wanted to ask you, you know, first off, like, you know, why do that? And also, what was your experience like there? Because I think it is, like, first off, it's interesting. And then, B, for people out there that don't really know what to, you know, do for that next step or are worried about taking a big leap.
Yep. So that was really, it was just a whim, like just a leap of faith, because I have my friend JC Dean, who's someone I think you should definitely have on the podcast. I think he has a really good perspective on the fitness industry. Like, we got started at the same time and became friends. He was going out there, and at that point I was planning to go to Australia for a little bit and try and see what it was like over there. But at the time I was like, all right, when do I get a chance? Because you and I went to Japan. I was like, that was awesome. So I'm like, how often do I get a chance to travel with my friends or do something with my friends like that? Mm-hmm. So I'm like, I'll just delay going to Australia and I'll just hop on this trip to Thailand. So we went, and it was amazing. Like, it was completely out of my comfort zone, more so than Japan, because at least I knew, because being like how interested I was in like anime and manga and things like that, I at least had some kind of concept of Japan. And when we went, but Thailand, I literally knew nothing when I went. I just booked a ticket. I'm like, I'll go. Okay, good. Mm-hmm. And when
did you book that, like, when we were still at the hotel?
When
I remember, you're still like messing around with like your travel and stuff like that. Oh no, you went down south to like southern parts of Japan first, right?
Yeah. I went to Osaka. Yeah, mm-hmm. Went to Osaka after we were in Japan with Andy Morgan. Definitely have him on here too if you can get a chance. So I really just decided, I just took that leap and said, all right, I want to see what it's like. And going back to what we were saying earlier, that it, you know, I could have talked myself out of it, but I just decided it was like, okay, why not? There was no reason stopping me. Like, at that point I had left the gym in Shrewsbury, you know, because I knew I wanted to travel a bit, and I was starting to ramp up the online side of things. So I'm like, okay, this is the time in my life when I can do this. So I may as well do that. May as well do it while I have the opportunity to do so, and then the option to come back is always there, but the option to go may not. So I figured I might as well do it. So I get over there. It's complete culture shock, complete different language, complete different way of doing things, and like when the first day, it was like this sense of just calm, like compared to the hustle of being in the States. Because over there in Thailand, it's very chill. It's people just have the sense of like you have everything you need. There's no need to, I wouldn't say no need or no desire to strive, like constantly push and grind to get more. It's like, oh, I have my friends, my family, I have my business, I'm doing this, my job, and I'm good.
and so, no, like less materialism.
Yeah, less materialism. Lot more. It's a lot more family oriented, which I learned is common in Asian cultures. You know, compared to, you know, individualism in America, maybe. Mm-hmm. So over there, it's like people are taking care of each other. People have each other's backs. And even as a foreigner, I felt welcome. And, you know, I've talked to people and they say, like, oh, it's because you got money, this and that. But even when I wasn't spending anything in certain places, I was taking the great care of people, went out of their way. Like, I was staying at this guest house when we first got there. And we stayed there for a week. And then we, or no, like 3 days, and we left. But for the next 6-7 months that I was there, I'd walk like a mile over there to the guest house a couple times. We can just sit down and chat, and they'd make breakfast, and they'd teach me a little bit of Thai, and they'd ask, just, they were interested, and they weren't trying to like sell anything or get me to buy anything or anything like that. It was just genuine. They were just welcoming me to their country. And I found that with that sense of chillness is that it was a lot. It gave me a lot more clarity to think about the way that I want to approach things or what I want to give to, you know, the people I work with or the people that read my writings and things like that, compared to when I was back home. Because I was, it's just so much, when you're doing so much and you're grinding all the time, you almost don't have any breathing room to really sit back and go, okay, what do I want to do? How do I want to do it? What do I want my impact to be? It's just more reactionary than anything else when you're in that mode. So I really, that was my favorite thing about Thailand, just that sense of calm. And I didn't have a phone over there, so I'm not checking my phone. I'm just outside looking at birds and flowers walking around. It's 100 degrees. I'm sweating. I got jeans on because I'm an idiot, but I'm like, huh, whatever. This is beautiful. So while I was over there, I just focused on relaxing. And I did a bit of work, like I write for bodybuilding.com, and I have online clients as well. But I was just meeting different entrepreneurs over there. They have a really great entrepreneurial community in Southeast Asia. That could be Vietnam, Thailand, or whatnot. So if anyone is looking to get out of the States and try something else, dip their feet into travel while still having a place where they can work from online and still have people to that kind of get what they're trying to do, I definitely recommend Southeast Asia.
Is there like any online community or anything like that for people to, you know, get information on that? Or is it just like kind of like find someone that is already out there?
Yeah, it's there is this one community. It's called the Dynamite Circle. I'm not a member of it because I'm off of forms, but I know a lot of people in that group. So it's called Dynamite Circle, and they're really big throughout Southeast Asia. So that's one way. But, you know, also if anyone's listening to this and wants an introduction or is thinking about it or has any questions, I'm more than happy to chat with them through email or Skype or whatever about, you know, how to get started, or at least get them in the right direction. Because I think just being not knowing can stop a lot of people. And I realize that I'm a bit crazy in my approach. It's like a jump and then I figure it out when I'm there versus trying to figure out everything before I do it, because then I just get in my own way too much and nothing gets done. So it's really like being around those types of people definitely sparks some kind of creativity and gets you thinking about things differently. Even if it, like, the same things you were thinking about here, you look at them from a different perspective and all of a sudden you have these new insights and you're just more motivated to do what you wanted to do.
So, and did you just head out there with a bag of clothes and your laptop?
Yep. I came out, yeah, my friends gave me a MacBook Pro right before I left from 2009. The screen was cracked. I had to get it reformatted. So I was like, I'll take this. And I got some shoes. I got my Pumas. I just took one big bag and a backpack. And I planned on being there 2 months. I ended up staying 7. And I'm leaving again in a week to go back and just see what the next chapter looks like.
So and then I remember we actually jumped on Skype a couple months ago while you were out there, just because for me, it's just super fascinating to, like, jealous of the ability to go do that, you know, to the ability to go do it, and then B, to like actually have the balls or, you know, have the guts to say, all right, well, I'm just going to go live somewhere else for 6 months, because I love going to Japan, but I start feeling it like after, like, oh, you know, I'm out there for like 7, 8, 9 days. I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty much ready to get back home and to like be back in my comfort zone or things like that. Did you ever get any of those feelings once you're out there? Like, yeah, I don't know if this is the right spot, or it was just like perfect.
No, it wasn't. It was definitely learned. Like, I remember one, I don't know what caused it. Like, I was reading, maybe I was watching a YouTube video and they had that sad music in the background. I don't know what video it was. I just started crying. I'm like, man, I miss my friends. I miss my parents. I miss all the stuff that I was used to back at home. But I'm like, you know, I got all the tears out, and it was like, okay, you know, I thought about it. I'm like, this is normal because it's something new. So it's like a bubble. So it's like being over the, like all the way across the world. I was stretching that bubble more than I had before. So when you do that, there's going to be discomfort, but just because there's discomfort doesn't mean that it's a bad thing. It's just different. And then as you get used to that sense of discomfort, it starts to become more, you're able to handle it better as you stick with it. So I think that was, and because I was over there, I'm like, all right, I have a visa for this amount of time. My friends are here. I'm going to at least stay for this amount of time. It forced me to push through it. And as I pushed through it, I was like, this is my situation. How can I make it the best situation that it can be with what I have? And once I started thinking that way, then everything got better. Like my mood got better, and things just tended to go that in a positive direction. You know, there were still ups and downs, but it was more learned than anything else, because I was there already. So it's either I'm going to go back home and then wonder, oh, I want to be back, I regret leaving so soon, or staying and figuring out how to deal with it from there. And like what you said, like I can completely relate with what you just said about just, you know, missing the feeling of comfort and being home. But, you know, it's just like fitness. Like when I first started out, it was like, this hurts. I'm like, why do I even do this? I went to the gym yesterday. Why am I not bigger today? This is stupid. But, you know, you kind of have to reframe it. Like, okay, I'm committed to this for this. Just keep pushing forward. Trust the process. Things get better. And it always does, regardless of the situation. It change is going to happen. And, you know, with the right mindset, there's always some kind of lesson to be learned in any, you know, setback or failure or anything like that.
Damn. All right. So we'll stay on this for a little bit longer. But with the trip out there, once you're there for 6 or 7 months, like what did you take out of that? Like what did you take back with you, or how did your mindset change after being out there for so long? Like if people out there just want to get a feel of what that experience really did to you.
Man. All right. Can we swear on this podcast? We're in episode 304.
All right. Well, we're going to give you guys 5 seconds. If you're listening to this right now and there's kids in the car, this is where you're going to tell them to put on Frozen on their DVD player or whatever, and not pay attention to the next couple minutes.
I'll just drop one F-bomb and they'll be done, but there's no other word that better fits. So, like, being over there and coming back is just, like, mentally I give, like, at least 97.6% less fucks than I did when I first went over there. Like, I went over there with so much anxiety and wondering, like, what will people think of this and that. But the more time I spent over there, I realized I'm just like, that stresses me out. That it doesn't add anything to my life, wondering what other people would think about maybe what I write or what my opinion is on this or that. And it was just something about being free from that over there, because, you know, a large portion of the population there I can't communicate with because I don't know the language. So like I'll turn around and see someone laughing. I'm like, I don't know if they're laughing at me or just laughing at something they saw. But in that moment, it's like, all right, well, what I can choose to give a, oh, I already said I wouldn't drop it again. They got the earmuffs on. I can choose to care what they think, or what, like, I can choose to, how do I put it? Choose to place my own perception of what they're doing onto them, and then let that affect me. Like, oh, they're laughing at me because I stand out. I'm so swole over here, and everyone's so small, and I look ridiculous. Or I can just go, oh, they're laughing, okay, and just move on. And with the former thought pattern, it's like, man, that could get to me for way longer than it should. And with the latter, it's like, oh, it's just something that occurred, and then you move on. And I started to apply that to, you know, my philosophies about fitness and training, and just take off a lot of the restrictions that I placed on myself. Like, I'm like, don't say this because people will think it's stupid. But like, hey, if I know that it works, at least for me, I can share it with my from my experience. And if someone gets something out of it, perfect. If it doesn't work for them, that's fine. There's something else out there for them that may work, and I hope they find it, and I'm more than happy to help them find it if what I'm talking about doesn't work. But that sense of freedom really, it started just from that, and it spread into, you know, like my relationships with people and friends, and then also how I approach my writing and my programming and things like that. It's more just willingness to try things and not care, not be so caught up on what other people will think, because that, man, it just tires you out, and it doesn't allow you to express your creativity as much as you could. And, you know, just going back to like your video game podcast, you could easily just go, oh man, people are crapping on it, this and that, and not put out another episode ever. But you love it, and you're going to do it regardless of what people are saying. And because you're doing that so authentically, and you don't care what they're like, the haters out there, or whatever, or people that don't have anything resourceful to say about it, people love it because they're like, oh, this, he really loves this, and he just doesn't care. And it shows. Like, you don't care in a negative way. Like,
yeah, I mean, it's like, no, I hear what you're saying, though, and it's kind of a running joke, whether it be, you know, with the staff at NBSC or, you know, people that know me personally. It's kind of like a running joke that, you know, that I do own old video games and things like that, or, you know, it's still amazingly, you know, people find that as something to joke about, and I'm like, dude, I know people that own like 500 DVDs.
Right. I'm like,
are you kidding?
and that's something I love about you, man. Like, I remember coming over and you having the arcade cabinets. I'm like, yes, this is great. And people would like, I'd tell them about my weekend. They're like, you know what? They're like, you guys are playing arcade games in this house? I'm like, yup, whatever. This is awesome.
Yeah, well, I don't have arcade machines anymore. I've kind of scaled back a little bit, but you do that as you grow. And for me, I've always fought with, you know, the mental side of materialism and owning this stuff. And I kind of have to a certain extent, to do my other podcast that I do to like follow the guidelines of why I'm doing that in the first place. But I totally hear it. And like I said, I almost wish I could get that opportunity to, you know, go to and live in Japan, like live in Kyoto for six months and only be able to bring like my PlayStation Vita and a bunch of clothes and my laptop, and that's it. And just say, you're gonna have to do something, like go on your own adventure. And it's a little bit harder to do these days with the, you know, things that I'm doing at work.
Yeah. And and those situations force you to grow. But all, you know, the more that I think about and reflect on, you know, the last 7 months, it's that whatever situation you're in at the moment, you can always take something from it that you need to grow. So that's like awesome. Like, no matter where you're at, even if it sucks like a bag of balls, you can still take something from that to grow and better yourself. And even when things are going great, you can still do that. So it's like, no matter where you're at, you have an opportunity to become better and take something from that the situation of that moment. And that is just a really awesome feeling, because a lot of times it's easy to feel stuck in your situation and like you don't have any say in the matter and just get down on yourself. And I think that, I know, like for me, that mentality can pop up again every now and then. And then I'll realize, I'm like, this is stopping me from doing something that I really want to do. Why am I holding on to it? That'd be like a monkey jumping on your back, and you're trying to, like a 500-pound monkey on your back, and you're trying to climb a hill. Mm-hmm. And like halfway up the hill, you're like, what? Why did I even have this monkey? Why did I climb halfway up this hill with this monkey on my back? That's stupid. And then once you get it off, you're like, why didn't I do that sooner? Oh, sweet baby Jesus. And then it's just easier from that point on. So it's really that mentality, and it goes, even with training, it does start with that mentality, is that you have to just view where you're at, like view the pursuit of what you're going for as the reward initially, because whatever reward we're going for, goal or whatnot, it's going to take time. So if the goal, the acquisition of the goal is the only thing keeping us in the game, you just burn out so fast. But if you approach it like learning, like it's like an RPG, you know, the getting to the end is more fun than the actual end itself. By the time you get to my own journey, it's like, when looking back now, the times I've had the best results oddly enough, is when I wasn't so focused on the results. It was more, I was focused on like one workout at a time. I'm not like micromanaging 16-week blocks or this or that. I'm like, oh, it's Monday. Okay, I trained today. What am I doing? Oh, this. All right, awesome. Whew, that was fun. And just give it what you have in that session and then let that be it. Let that be what you have, because really it is all you have. All you have is that moment where you're in. You can't control the outcome. You can only control the effort that you're putting in, and it'll be what it is after. But you can't get too caught up in the end goal right from the start. Otherwise, it just seems so far away that it's easy to get distracted or burned out versus just sticking with one thing at a time.
Awesome, man. So I know we're kind of up against the clock, but what we're going to do is, I think if you have time later this week, we're just going to pause now and we'll come back and we'll record another episode later this week with you, if that's cool.
Word up, man. I'm always ready to come back.
All right, cool. So just a quick, real quick, check out Roger Staal. I was like, do I just call you like Raj Law?
You know what? Oh, man. You know where I'll tell you where I got that from later, man.
Okay, we'll do that in the next episode. But RajLawFitness.com, at Raj Law on Twitter. Anything else that you have to, let people know about?
Nope, that's all. Come there. And I also have a podcast called the Fit Smart Podcast with my friend JC Dean. It's on iTunes. We get ridiculous. We talk about fitness. I'm not going to try and sell it too hard. You got a lot to listen to.
Check it out.
Yeah, check it out. If you like it, great. If you don't like it, I still love you.
And of course, don't forget to support the FitCast. If you enjoy, the show, and like Molly said a while back, like if you want to make sure content like this keeps coming, please go to thefitcast.com, click on that donation tab on the left-hand side, and if you're in the position to do so, please contribute to the show. I know we've done over 300 episodes. If you've gotten something out of it and you feel like it's worth, contributing towards, you think this is a valuable, resource, please go there and submit a donation along the same lines. If you can, jump on iTunes, submit a review on there, subscribe to the FitCast on there, and also FitSmart as well. While you're there, might as well do it.
Word up.
Listen to an episode first. Be honest. Be real, but only put positive reviews up. And I'm at Kevin Larrabee on Twitter, and at FitCast is also on Twitter as well to stay up to date about upcoming guests and all the crazy stuff that's going on. So, Roger, thank you so much for taking the time, man.
Thanks for having me, man.